So I had the difficult task when we moved to Southern Florida many years ago of learning and understanding an entirely different housing market. When we moved down there, it was in the middle of the great housing boom of Florida, and suddenly, you know, you pretty much couldn't buy an outhouse for under $100,000. It was just crazy how much everything cost. And of course, you know, all of the houses looked very different than anything that I'd ever lived in before, being that we lived coastally and in the very far southern portion of Florida. Pretty much everything was one story and concrete block because hurricanes. And so, you know, you kind of had to learn what made for a really nice house there as opposed to what made for a really nice house up here. I discovered that one of the ways that you could tell the difference between a really nice house there and a really nice house here is a really nice house down there, you can tell it by looking at their windows. Because around their windows, in neat little lines on either side of the windows, there will be these little tiny holes all around their windows on either side. If you live down there, you know what that means. That means when the hurricanes come, you won't have to go to Home Depot and buy as much plywood as you get your hands on, which is what I wound up having to do because my windows didn't have the little tiny holes. See, what they have down there are hurricane shutters. They look like corrugated aluminum. And those little tiny holes are where the bolts go. So if you're looking at one of those houses and they've got the little tiny holes on the windows, you know they've got the good metal hurricane, you know, preparation. And you kind of know that's a really good house. But there's another side. You know that there's a really, really nice house when not only do they have the little holes next to their windows, but next to their air conditioning unit, there's another big thing outside their house. That's a generator. Let me tell you what, there is no rich like Florida rich 2 days after a hurricane in the middle of the night when none of the rest of us have lights or air conditioning or anything else like that, and your next door neighbor's got that generator going, and you know their air conditioning's on. You know their refrigerator's running. You know their lights are on, and they're watching television. That's rich. That's Florida rich. And so, you know, down there, you know when a hurricane's coming because it's all that you really think about. And then they have this thing called a spaghetti model. If you don't live down there, you've probably never in your life seen a spaghetti model. But a spaghetti model basically says the tropical storm is here, and we think it could go here, or 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 here. And then when it's all said and done, the lines all just look like a big pile of spaghetti. And you kind of look at yourself on the map and you go, okay, do one of those lines go over my house? And if one of those lines does in fact go over your house, and you don't have the little holes next to your windows, and you don't have the built-in generator next to your house, then you're making a trip to Home Depot. You're buying plywood. And if you get there and you're early and you're lucky and you're wealthy, you see that there are stacks and stacks and stacks of portable generators. Because you might want to buy yourself one of those portable generators so that when the power goes out and the hurricane comes, you can turn that generator on, plug your refrigerator in, maybe start up your air conditioning. Backup power. Makes a huge difference living down there. And it's probably not a really bad idea for anybody that lives in an area where you have a lot of power outages. Backup power is a very, very useful thing. But here's the problem. As Christians, it has come to my attention throughout my life that most of us, and when I say most of us, I'm not pointing a finger at anybody else other than myself, but I would say this is true for everyone. Most of us treat our faith like backup power. Most of the time, most days, everything is going fine. Most days, we have the strength to carry out the tasks that are placed in front of us. We have the patience to deal with the people that God has put in our lives that require a little extra patience. And let's be honest, we all have some of those folks, we have the courage to deal with the little tiny problems that crop up. We have the time, we have the strength, we have the health. But sometimes, in every single life, in every single human life that I've ever seen, the spaghetti models start presenting themselves. And you start looking at things that are facing you, and you say to yourself, I wonder if that disaster is going to come over me. I wonder if that health problem is on the way towards me. I wonder if that challenge that I didn't anticipate is going to be my challenge. And you start thinking about, what am I going to do when I don't have time? What am I going to do when I don't have health? What am I going to do when I don't have courage or strength or my patience fails? Well, for most people, that's when we crank up the generator of faith. We put a little fuel in it, we read our Bible, we come to church, we say a prayer, we hope that it turns over because, you know, you haven't used it for a little while, and so it's like any other gas-powered machinery. You sort of do that thing where you put fuel in it, you prime it, you grab hold of that handle, and you think, boy, I hope this starts. And then you just jerk as hard as you can, and you hope that it just comes on. And sometimes you're lucky, and it does. And sometimes you're not lucky. And you just pull and pull and pull until you feel like you've pulled your arm out of socket and nothing happens. See, that's the problem if we try to treat our faith like a backup. There's no guarantee it's going to be there for us when we need it if we've not maintained it, we've not practiced it. And when I say that this is something that happens all over Florida, it does not necessarily exactly happen all over Florida. It happens most places in Florida. There are a couple of places where it doesn't happen. A couple of communities where people don't freak out and go and buy themselves a backup power generator because they never lose power. And the reason for this seems like it should make absolute obvious sense. And I don't know why we as human beings do this, but we do this. If you go to Florida, you'll notice that they build things there pretty much the same way we build things here. If you want electricity, well, there's an electric pole outside your house. They run a wire into your house. That wire goes into your house. You have electricity. The wire goes to the pole. The pole goes to the substation. The substation goes to the power station. And it's all above ground and out where anybody and everybody can see it. It's also out where it can get easily destroyed. There are a few communities in Florida that kind of looked at that situation and went, crazy thought, what if we buried the power lines? What if instead of running them out where they can get knocked down and torn down and blown down and rained down, what if we just put them underground, ran them to people's houses? Well, what they discover in those situations is, those communities don't lose power. They don't have to figure out, how am I going to grill 36 steaks from my freezer because the power's been out for the last 3 days and I either eat it now or not at all. By the way, that is kind of a fun thing in Florida. You have a long power outage like that, suddenly it becomes a big old block party because everybody's got to grill everything that's in their freezer that's thawed out. And so you suddenly have everybody out in their front yard grilling everything that's about to go bad. That doesn't happen in those communities where there's a different source of power. As Christians, as God's believers, if we are willing to treat our faith like backup power, then we might have some pretty spotty results. But what Paul here is saying, both in 1st and 2nd Corinthians, especially when he's talking about the thorn that was in his own side, is that if we start with the assumption that my strength is what's going to carry me through the day, and I'll fill in with God where I have to, we're going to disappoint ourselves and we're going to disappoint God. But Paul wants us to understand that there is absolutely fantastic power and blessing in being weak. Because in our weakness, in accepting our weakness, in understanding that I start out the day weak, and that I do not have the strength to face what comes towards me, then we begin the day with the understanding that our strength must come from somewhere else. That as Paul says, God's grace must be sufficient for me. Paul wants us to understand that there is great power in weakness. Not because we are supposed to go through life constantly stumbling and falling on our face, but because we are supposed to be those who see God as our primary source of strength. Not something that we fall back on when we just can't handle it ourselves, but something that we lean on in every single element of our day. That there not be a thing that we face that we do not face with God's strength and grace. And that means the little things. That means the medium-sized things. That means the catastrophic things. We are to be God's people who face all of our trials and troubles and tribulations, not with our strength, but with God's strength. Paul wants us to understand this because the people of Corinth were people that lived on the assumption that everything that they had to do, everything that was a part of their day-to-day life was a direct function of their own personal doxa, their glory. The word doxa means glory, strength, honor. It's a Roman concept. Paul wanted them to instead be the sort of people that say, I don't have personal strength. I don't have personal glory. I don't have doxa. I boast, though, in the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, who gives me strength to overcome not just the hard things, not just the big things, but the everything, the everyday. And that changes the way we live. That changes who we are. When we go to work in the morning, actually, even before that, when we get out of bed in the morning, do we look to God to give us the strength to get out of bed? Do we actively engage God and say, Lord, thank you for the day that I've had. I haven't gotten out of bed yet, but you know what? I trust you to give me the strength to do that, to face all of the troubles and trials and the strifes that I'm going to face, and to be not just somebody who leans on your strength in that moment when I have to, but leans on your strength for every moment of every day. We've been talking now for the last few weeks about the importance of weakness. And I've had any number of folks come to me and say, Pastor Russ, I am so glad that you've been talking about the fact that weakness isn't something to be ashamed of. I've been so glad that you have said that weakness is something that we need to hold up, because do you know what? I'm tired of trying to convince everyone around me that I'm strong enough. Because I feel like I have to put that face on. I feel like I have to present myself that way to everyone, or else I'm going to let them down. Thank you for lifting up the fact that weakness isn't something to be ashamed of, but something to be celebrated. Because in our weakness, we truly are able to tap into God's strength. It's funny. I feel like every generation has defining characteristics at any given moment that if I were to say to you, define the people of the country or the region or the culture that you live in right now. And I think more often than not, we could all kind of point to one thing and say, oh, that's it, you know? Whether it's happy or prosperous or patriotic or excited or hopeful or depressed or sorrowful or crushed. I think if you were to say to me, Pastor Russ, give me one word. Give me one word that defines the world that we live in today. You know what the word I would pick would be? Tired. If I had to pick one word, I would say tired. And not just tired, but weary. I think we live in an intensely weary world where we all feel like we've been drugged down and we just don't have what we need to stand back up again. And I think a lot of it has to do with the question of where do I take my strength from? Because if I'm looking to do all of the things that I need to do, to be all of the things I feel like I need to be, to accomplish all that I need to accomplish, it's going to just seem like an exhausting impossibility. Unless we first are willing to set aside our personal sort of doxa, our glory, and say, you know what, I'm not enough. I don't need to be enough. I don't need to be everything to everyone. I don't need to be capable of everything. I just need to know that I am God's creature. I am his son, I am his daughter, I am one who has been saved by his grace. And in this, God walks with me through my difficult times, through my easy times, and he is never going to leave me to fall without standing next to me to lift me back up again. I think that we are a culture that is tired because we are not a culture that looks to its faith first. Instead, we're a culture that looks to our own strength first and then waits to use the backup generator of faith when we need to. I think we need to learn how to reverse that and look to our faith as our constant source of strength in all things, in all ways, and in all places. And in doing that, I think we understand why Paul celebrated the thorn in his side as a source of hope and strength and confidence, not because he was able to overcome some physical deficit, but because God was able to give him the strength to overcome and be who he needed to be, even in the midst of his own brokenness.